each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good Monday afternoon. This is Mary Helen Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and I am joined by my co-host, Loretta Frelick, who is a former criminal prosecutor for the Cook County State's office, State's Attorney's Office, rather. And so you have two lawyers filling in for Father Anthony, as we do most Mondays here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ, and it is a pleasure to be with you again. We are now into Advent. Loretta, how was your weekend?
You know, it was beautiful. We celebrated my mom's 95th birthday.
So when that was the second, right?
The first.
December 1st.
Yeah, if she was alive, she'd be 95 on Friday.
Her first birthday with Jesus in heaven.
Yes, her first birthday. So we all asked Jesus to give her big smoocheroonies, and we're all very
she's with the morning
glad
glories
she is
and
with
the Lord.
Lord. Yeah, so we had a lovely family time.
Okay.
It was hard, but
yeah. Well, you know what? You have to go through that whole, in my experience, having lost both my parents, that
yes.
first year. You got to go through all the firsts. So
yeah.
My mom's birthday will be actually this Friday, December 8th. So she was born on Immaculate Conception. And so I always I get my, her favorite teapot and proper tea china. And I have, she loved Christmas fruitcake. That's a very big British tradition. And you know what? And she would
always say. She's the only person.
No, you know what? She would always say that, and I think she's right about this, that Americans make jokes about fruitcake because they really haven't had good fruitcake.
Okay.
And so we get ours from Assumption Abbey, which is the Trappist monks, and
mm-hmm.
they use the recipe from the pastry chef of the Duke and Duchess of Windsor.
Wow.
So, yeah, they hired him, and he came with his recipe and showed the monks how to make it. And so it is a really, that's the kind of fruitcake where you eat it and you go, okay, this is really tasty. And of
yeah.
course, there's, fruitcakes either use brandy or they use rum or they use bourbon. And that's kind of, the bourbon is a more of an American fruitcake because bourbon isn't as popular in Europe. But yeah, I would, if you want to get a good fruitcake and you want to support the monks, go to Assumption Abbey's website. And
mm-hmm.
Fruitcake is so good that William Sonoma stocks it.
Oh,
in all
wow.
of its, yeah, they stock it in their stores for Christmas and on their website, too. But if you want to, you can get it for a little bit less money if you just go to the Abbey and directly. And then they don't charge you for any shipping or anything either. And then it goes directly to the ministries.
Or I can just stop by your house and
have some. Yeah, do you want to come by Friday?
On Friday.
We'll have proper tea and we'll have. Now, technically, you're not supposed to have any of the fruitcake until Christmas morning.
Okay,
so
well,
you're supposed
I won't
to have
tell.
Yes, but I do it to honor my mom.
Of course.
Yeah. So
And she was such a darling. She deserves to be honored.
Yes. Right. So if. So the Assumption Abbey Fruitcake, the website
mm-hmm.
is TrappistMonks.com. Mm. TrappistMonks.com, the Assumption Abbey Bakery. And so it's just kind of interesting. When the Assumption Abbey was developing its fruitcake recipe,
yes.
the monks sought the help of world-class chef Jean-Pierre Huger, who served in the royal employ of the Duke and Duchess of Windsor's pastry chef.
Wow.
So his assistance and his generosity in giving us the original recipe and showing us how to produce it gave the monks the impetus to go forward with their fruitcake. They are dark, rich, traditional style of fruitcake. They are baked and aged under the supervision of the monks. So everything from the marinating of the fruit, which is done in alcohol, to the mixing and the baking, and everything is done right at the monastery by the monks. It is not a commercial enterprise.
Wow.
So, yeah, that, you know, the monks say that ensures, that's why it's such a high quality. It's not a job, right? This is part of how they support the monastery. So
very good.
Yeah. So there you go. There's your fruitcake trivia for the week. And it's, you know, and again, if you order from the monks, there's no shipping, and they get it to you very quickly. They are really, yeah, they're very speedy fast with this. So
it's probably more information about fruitcake than I'll ever need.
Okay. No, but you never know because, you know, people—
I can come to your house
that's
on
right,
December
and try it. And usually you have a little piece of marzipan alongside it.
Oh,
and
my gosh. So, something else I don't
eat. Yeah. So, no. So in Great Britain, like, so, for example, Charles and Diana's wedding cake was that fruitcake with the marzipan icing. That is the traditional wedding cake in most of Great Britain and Ireland.
Wow.
Yeah. And in Ireland, they call it Christmas cake. And it's but that is what people would typically have for their weddings. And that was the really interesting with, you know, Meghan Markle and Harry, that they didn't have the traditional Christmas. Mm. They didn't have the traditional wedding cake with the fruitcake with the marzipan. She ordered some kind of, you know, lemon chiffon something or other. So we should have seen the problems coming.
Exactly.
With the wedding cake. Anyway. So
there wasn't a whole lot traditional
wedding. So, and today is the Feast of St. Barbara, December 4th, who is considered she's been venerated since she's one of the early martyrs of the church and venerated as one of what they call the holy helpers. So she's invoked in thunderstorms. And she's also the patron saint of artillerymen and miners. So,
okay.
So she was the daughter of a pagan and then professed Christianity and refused to marriage. And then her father ordered her to be tortured and beheaded. So anyway. And
see all those parents out there that think they have problems with their teenage daughters.
Isn't that something? But
how about them converting to Christianity?
Yeah, and some of the symbolism of the portrayal of her in statues and in art is really quite beautiful. And she was supposed to have been a very, very gorgeous woman and had many suitors, and which could have explained her father's rage at her not, you know, turning down marriage for this new way of life called Christianity.
Yep.
So there you go.
There you go.
Pray to St. Barbara today. But, you know, it's always, I think I'm a big fan of having, you know, patrons for things. And if you're in a bad thunderstorm, remember, it's St. Barbara is the one you turn to.
Well, and I also I'm the teacher at confirmation at my parish, so
that's right.
I am always looking for saints that provide some interesting facts, because I think that God really does choose our saint for us. I mean, who?
So, who do you count as your patron with the name Lawrence of which Lawrence?
Well, my middle name is Martin, which is a family name. So, I used to say to my mom, "Well, Mom, you know, I need a saint name. Well, how come I got?" And my mother was very smart. St. Martin de Porres is a November saint.
There you go.
She always told me that my patron was St. Martin de Porres. But I have to tell you that when I was in eighth grade, I chose St. Michael, which was unusual in my parish for a girl to choose a boy saint. But I did choose St. Michael the Archangel. And then many, many years later, I get involved in law enforcement.
Oh, right.
And
of course,
who is the patron of law enforcement?
Yeah.
You know, and that's a wonderful, wonderful prayer. St. Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle, be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him. We humbly pray, and do thou, O Prince of the Heavenly Hosts, by the divine power of God, cast into hell Satan and all the evil spirits who wander the earth seeking the ruin of souls. And, you know, that prayer used to be prayed. You know, its history is saving the church from attack. It used to be prayed at the conclusion of all the masses. And I really wish we could go back to it. I know our rosary group prays it.
Yeah, we do it at my parish after every daily mass. We do it. And we don't do it after the Sunday masses any longer. But We used to do it, you know, it just depends on who the pastor is at the time, but under under previous administrations, as they say.
There you go.
We used to say it even after the Sunday Mass. So it's a very powerful prayer.
And, it is.
But so for your first name, I mean, there's, you know, Loretta,
yes.
as in Our Lady of Loretto. Mm-hmm. But then there's, the way you spell it is like a feminine.
The Irish way, L-A-U-R.
So the feminine of Lawrence.
Yes.
Yeah. So rather than Our Lady of Loretto.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a very pretty name.
Why, thank you.
Yeah, very pretty name.
My grandmother, my mother, and me.
Yes, and it's St. Lawrence, you know, of course, is, you know, he's the patron saint of comedians. Because
I did not know.
Yeah, well, because
like
when he was being
funny, but.
Yeah, when he was grilled alive. That's
yes,
how he
yes.
was martyred and said, "I'm done on this side. Flip me over."
Yes.
And that's why he's the patron saint of comedians. So,
and after he went and was given 3 days to pull all the treasures of the church
right.
to present to the pagans, and he went and gave that all away, and then produced the poor.
The poor. Those are the treasures of the church. Yeah.
It's, yes, they are.
So yeah, no, good for him. And you love to hear those kind of stories, and you know there might be a little bit of lore and other things, you know, associated with that. But still, it's
if it tells a good story with a holy point.
There you go.
Keep going.
That's right.
You know,
right.
we're going to have at St. Luke, since we're talking about saints, this is a blessed Carlos Acutis.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, he was a young man. He died at like 15.
Yep.
He was so good to the poor, forever giving them everything he had, drawing his family closer to Jesus.
Uh-huh.
He foretold that he was going to die, but his mother would be doubly blessed afterwards because he was an only child. And do you know that his mother then had twins?
Oh, wow.
Yes, but his, I'll have more about it next week, but his, the blessed Carlos Acutis demonstration of the Eucharist and his beliefs is coming to St. Luke Parish in River Forest, and so people will have an opportunity.
So his relics are coming, or
not
his mother?
Relics?
Okay, because his
mother's
been touring.
He made a website
yeah.
about the real presence of
right.
Jesus in the Eucharist.
Right.
And I have not seen this display, but I hear it's fabulous. So
okay.
If you've got young people that are wondering about their role in the church, I would highly recommend.
Yeah, he's a great.
These that you bring your kids to see this and see what a 15-year-old boy can do in the church with God's help.
Yeah.
You know, and just, you know, promoting the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist, which is something that is so needed today that the American church is having a whole big revival about it in this summer, in July, in
right.
Indianapolis.
Right, right, right. We're going to have that Eucharistic
Revival,
Eucharistic Congress, and
mm-hmm.
And I understand if you want to go, get your tickets now because they're having it in Indianapolis, and I actually was speaking to a bishop friend over the weekend, and he was telling me the hotel rooms are now really at a premium that they can't absorb
right.
all of the people that are coming, so they're asking anybody who lives in the Midwest if they would just come for the day, make it a day trip, because they aren't going to have hotel rooms to put everybody. It's going to be that crowded. So
I got my reservation and hotel room over a year ago.
Did you really? Good
yes.
for you. Good for you. Are you going with other people from your parish?
You know, I'm going with Joyce DeRiga,
oh,
a
wonderful.
Friend of the show and
yes.
the editor of the Chicago Catholic.
Okay.
And, in fact, it was Joyce's idea. She was looking for somebody who wanted to travel. She knows how much I love Jesus.
Yes.
And she thought it might be fun.
Now, there's a great road trip. I'd love to. There's something that would be a lot of fun to be with you for that, because that's going to be lovely. And I just pray that there's going to be just so many people who come back to the Lord through this. And
I'm looking forward to the procession.
Yeah.
I love the idea of marching Jesus through the streets.
Yeah.
There's something so powerful. I just know there's going to be so many conversions, so many people who return to the Lord. You know, and when Jesus is lifted up,
yeah,
it's only for our benefit. When he is given the glory, he can never be outgiven.
Right.
And so it's just going to fall right back on us.
Yeah. And you know, Sister Breege McKenna, who is an Irish poor Claire's sister, who has a healing ministry, she always talks about how the greatest healings that she's ever witnessed in all she does, she said, it's not when I pray with people. She said it's when the Eucharist is taken through the room and placed in front of people.
Yes. So, well, you know, Mary, I was in Africa about 10 years ago with a priest, Father Stephen, and I saw what I believe to be a Eucharistic miracle. When he lifted up the monstrance, it like made a circular motion. And so I asked Father, I said, Father, were you doing that or was Jesus doing that? He looked at me, Father Stephen. Oh, my gosh. He said, Loretta, that's Jesus.
Oh, wow.
When I bring Jesus and expose him in the monstrance between warring tribes, the Lord wants to be with his people so much, and he wants healing for them so much that he says, I can barely hold on to him. He's trying to get to his people. So I think there's plenty of miracles that are going to happen. Every time we go to Mass, we see a miracle of, you know, the bread and wine being turned into the body and blood. So I think we should expect great things, Mary.
Right. Well, let's just be people of anticipation, because that's what Advent is all about, isn't it? So, well, speaking of anticipation, we'll go to our first break, and then when we come back, we'll continue our conversation here on the first week in December on Winds of Change. Don't go away.
Howdy, folks. This is Jimmy Akin from Catholic Answers Live, and Advent is the time where we're waiting for Jesus to come to us. It's right there in the name Advent. In Latin, venire means to come, and ad means to. So Advent is when we're waiting for Jesus to come to us, and that's what makes Advent so special.
You are listening to
Mary Fiorito
and
Loretta Freilich
on Winds of Change. Sometimes it's tough to hear Winds of Change over the air, what with tall buildings, power lines, and other static. Now you can hear Winds of Change anywhere, anytime, or on any device. When Winds of Change is on the air, live, Monday through Friday, noon to 1, go to ststandschurch.org. Scroll down to the Winds of Change tile and click on the Listen Live button. For Winds of Change podcasts, click on Listen to Episodes or visit the Winds of Change Facebook page.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Freilich. We're sitting in today for Father Anthony on Winds of Change. And it is the first week in December, and the first week in December is chock full of big feast days. First of all, we talked a little bit about the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, the Solemnity, rather, which is Friday, because I mentioned it was my mother's birthday, but it's also a holy day of obligation this year. So you got to go to Mass. You can go Thursday night, you can go Friday morning, Friday at lunchtime, Friday evening, but you've got to go to Mass. Going Saturday night for Sunday doesn't count for the Immaculate Conception. It is a distinct obligation, and as I mentioned, it's an important one. Our Lady, under her title of the Immaculate Conception, is the patroness of the United States. Yes. So it's not just important for us as Catholics to acknowledge that Mary was conceived without original sin, but it's also very important to us for our country, because Mary, our country, is under Our Lady's Immaculate Heart's protection. Again, just a reminder, probably anyone listening to this show already is aware it's a holy day and you plan to go, but just a little friendly reminder for those who might not be. At my parish, we mentioned it was a solemnity and listed the Mass times, but the presider didn't say it's a holy day of obligation, and that's, you know.
Y'all come.
Yeah, well, you have to be here, you know, and I think sometimes people are looking for that directive because in some conferences, they've moved around, whether or not, is it an obligation, if it falls on a Saturday or, and people get very confused. We'll talk it later in the show. We'll talk about the obligation for Christmas this year because Christmas is a Monday. So
we have to go on Christmas, Mary?
And it's separate. And you don't get a twofer. You can't go Sunday night.
I can't
and
go
have it,
Sunday at 5:30 and have it count.
It doesn't count for both. It can count for either one, but you have two distinct obligations.
And, Holy Mother of God. So, thank goodness her feast day, one of her feast days, is December 8th. Because, I mean, don't you want to spend time with Jesus?
Yeah. And you know, this is kind of a funny story. I have a friend when we were in college. And I went to Loyola in Chicago, and so Catholic school. And we had a campus ministry office that was fairly well-staffed. And so one of my friends, it might have been for Immaculate Conception now that I think of it. I do remember it was cold outside. It was winter. Anyway, he called university ministry and said, no. Is it a holy day? Is it a holy day of obligation Friday? No. Whenever it was. Okay, so she calls, and the poor woman answering the phone. So he gets like, I'm not joking. This woman went on for like 10 minutes about how it was a holy day of opportunity. And he should be so, you know, grateful that he lives on a campus where there's a beautiful chapel and multiple times a day to, you know, to avail yourself of this wonderful holy day of opportunity. I mean, she's going on and on and how you shouldn't think of it as a burden, but rather as a, you know, a gift that God's given us. So like she goes on, she has her like 10-minute thing. And then, so at the end, without a hint of irony, because he was a very nice guy, but he was kind of dense, he goes, so do I have to go to Mass or not? And she was furious with him. She thought he was making fun of her, and he was like, Mir, I don't know.
I just understand her, and she like, talked
and
for
20
minutes.
And then she got all mad at me, and you know, so yes. Then I remember, because then he called me and said, do I have to go to Mass?
Do I have to go to Mass?
He still wasn't clear after that whole conversation, so that was kind of funny. That's one of my funny, but anyway.
Well, I just want to share one thing about one of the young men in my confirmation class, and I won't mention his last name. But a young man by the name of Quinn.
Okay.
I have seen him every Sunday. I go to 9:30 at my parish.
Okay.
I have seen him every Sunday on his own.
Wow.
At Mass.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
And I keep hoping to catch his parents because I want them to know how proud they should be of him. And I finally asked him yesterday. I said, you know, Quinn, what gives here? You know, I said, why do you come to Mass every Sunday, even by yourself?
And?
I want to get closer to God.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
Loretta,
the impact that you are having
on
these young
people.
No,
it is not me.
No,
but if kids are coming to it on their own.
I know they are, but if you weren't teaching them about Jesus, they might not be. I don't think Quinn in a vacuum would have just up and decide, or maybe he would have, who knows, but I just don't want you to, you know, minimize your own importance in these kids' lives. And that's a message to everyone, right? Like to anyone listening here today, all of us can be a good example to someone else. In terms of, I've been getting copies of the Magnificat and leaving them around at my parish. Yeah.
What a great idea.
They will, if you promise them, you will give them to others, you know, who might consider subscribing, because that's how they are able to continue to produce their books, is through subscribers, like any other printed material. They will give you up to, I think it is, like 50 of them for free, and they'll mail them to you, and you just, you know, so I got
pass them around.
So I thought for December, that would be a good thing, because
that's
then people,
lovely.
Yeah, you know, to help people get closer to Christ during Advent, because I do think that, you know, that does inspire people to come back. They'll come back during Advent and Lent, even for Catholics who are kind of away from the church.
Can you tell our listeners what Magnificat is?
Oh, so sure. So Magnificat is both a print and an electronic resource that essentially takes you through a daily Mass, the evening prayer and morning prayer of the church, and then a little meditation for your day. So usually by the saint of the day, but sometimes just a meditation related maybe to the gospel. I find it very, very helpful. And then in the middle of it, it's a little like a little missalette almost.
Right.
In the middle of it is just the order of the Mass, so you can follow along with the different Mass prayers.
Benediction,
right. And then they have, what I really love about it, every month they feature a different work of art. And a Catholic art historian explains the importance and the meaning behind it. And so really famous works of art that you might not have really, you know, thought about other than thinking, oh, that's a beautiful painting or what have you.
Right.
So that's also a little feature of it. So very, very helpful resource. It's small enough. You can throw it in your purse, keep it in your car.
Yes.
Keep it on your nightstand if you just want to. I have a priest friend who once told me that his life really started to change, his relationship with the Lord. He said, when I made the promise to myself, no Bible, no breakfast, no Bible, no bed.
Right.
So I do I'm good about the no Bible, no bed part because I keep a copy, an extra copy on my bedside so I can read it before I go to bed. So I'm not like, you know, I am very, very nearsighted. So if I don't have my contacts in or my glasses on, I can't find stuff. So I keep one next to my bed so that I don't have an excuse. Like, oh, right. I have to go downstairs and find it and I'm going to find my glasses and blah, blah, blah. So that's how I have handled it. But yeah, I would really recommend that for Advent preparation.
And I've had just kind of a mystical experience with the Magnificat. I was at my girlfriend Mary's funeral mass, and her sister gave
me— Not me. That is not me. I would like to clarify.
No, not
this girlfriend Mary.
No.
Okay.
I would have been more articulate about, like, best friendships, if it was you.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and I'd be weeping.
I just don't
wailing.
Want. I, no, you I know, would if, be say they didn't know I was here and they just turned on. And you're saying my girlfriend Mary, her funeral. So, okay, go ahead.
Anyway, so her sister Sally got up and clearly read a eulogy. I'm not making this up. It was in St. Peter's Church in Skokie. Clearly read from paper a eulogy.
Okay.
And in it, she referenced that Mary used to love Blessed Elizabeth of the Trinity. She's now Saint Elizabeth, mm-hmm. but Blessed Elizabeth of the Trinity had a devotion to the three persons in one, the Trinity.
All right. But hence her name.
Yeah, hence her name. But she, well, you never know.
Well, no, that was the name given to her. That was given to her. And so, no, that's a fair enough point. Yeah.
So— she's made a statement, and I probably should have it memorized by now, but she made a statement like, do everything in the presence of the Trinity. So, you know, if you're having your breakfast, invite the Trinity in. It's that. Huh. I went and found it and read it and got more about what she was saying. So
okay.
I went up to Sally because I had to have this quote.
Right.
It was so brilliant. And I was like, what is it? What is it, Sally? Sally, I need a copy of that eulogy because I need a copy of the quote you used that Mary used to have by her bedside. And she looked at me and she said, what quote? The quote from Kermit the Frog? It's not easy being green.
Oh, no.
She said, that's what I read, Loretta. I said, no, Sally, I heard you quote some blessed saint. I couldn't even remember the name, but
okay.
I swear to God.
Do, 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 do. This is really getting interesting.
Opened my Magnificat 3 days later, and there was the commentary at the end of the Mass from Blessed Elizabeth of the Trinity.
Wow.
With that quote. And it was like she had her funeral Mass like November 30th, and this was a December Blessed Elizabeth quotation. So God can use so many ways to get our attention and to draw us to Him, and that's just one of them. So that is such a prayerful opportunity, that Magnificat. And, you know, I always look for my favorite authors to see what they're, you know, what quote they're using, and it's a lot of fun to see how God wants to speak to you from the pages of print that they've planned out at least a year in advance.
Yeah, no, it's— yeah, that is. And, you know, that's how I came to be spiritual friends with Carol Hauslander, because she had a reflection. And this was when my sister's husband had recently left her, and she was just crippled in terms of her prayer life. She just couldn't. She was even anyway, it was very, very, very horrible, heartbreaking thing. And my mom had found this meditation by Carol Hauslander, where she talks about how if you're in a situation like that and you're so anxious you can't pray, just get your rosary and hold on to it, because when you're holding your rosary, you're holding Mary's hand.
Amen.
And just, you know, and she says, our Lord knows what your heart is and Our Lady does too, and you just hold on to Mary's hand when you go to sleep at night. And I, you know, and again, it was just a couple of paragraphs at the end of the readings of the day for Magnificat. And I went back and, you know, found out more about her, and then just really fell in love with her and her writing. So,
and she's a mystic.
Right.
And the part that you told me about her that is so crazy, she dated the real James Bond.
Right,
and he dumped her.
Yeah. Yeah. And they had been, you know, a couple for, I want to say, a decade or if not more. And he very, very abruptly broke things off, and then like 3 weeks later married somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, his name was Sidney, they called him Sidney Reilly, Ace of Spies. He was a British double agent. And in fact, there's a PBS series about him. But he was Ian Fleming's inspiration for the James Bond characters. So, but you can look him up and look up that series on. But he was captured by the Russians then, and because I said he was a double agent, and they caught him and they executed him. So, and she had a vision of the execution. So, even before she was given formal word that he was dead, she already knew.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
well,
anyway.
Magnificat does a great job evangelizing God's people and bringing them to a deeper understanding of his tremendous love for us.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, another big, so we recommend that to you. And it's also a great Christmas gift to give
it
to somebody.
Is.
But if you just want to try it out, you can go onto their website and just request a sample copy, and they'll send you a sample copy so you can try it out for a month before. Or I think, you know, last year they had a great thing where you could subscribe for 3 months for $5.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it was great. So I actually got that for a couple of different friends. Some of whom went on to subscribe to it full time. So it's so the website is Magnificat, MagnifiCat, Magnificat.net. Magnificat.net. And so they have a separate website for the U.S. edition and for the British edition, because we use different, we have a different kind of liturgical calendar. But anyway.
And it's kind of bounced out of France, and they have some beautiful, beautiful children's books.
Yes, they do. And beautiful books of like coffee table books of Catholic artwork.
Yes. And okay, stop listening if you're listening, Marie, my cousin, because that is what that's one of the things that I got her this year for Christmas.
Oh, beautiful.
There's a little book of St. Therese. She's going to do everything for love, and it's all about love. And I think what a great book for Miss Marie to read. Okay, you can start listening again, Marie.
come back to the radio. Okay, so this week we also have, early December, almost all of December is just filled with beautiful feasts and memorials and with Advent overlaid on top of it. But one that is important worldwide is coming up this week. Depending on where you live, it's observed on either the 5th or the 6th of December. And that is the Feast of St. Nicholas.
Get your shoes out, Mayor.
So put out your shoes, your boots, your slippers. Because St. Nicholas Day would be the day where many European children, it would be the custom that they would receive their Christmas gifts on St. Nicholas Day. So Christmas Day itself is reserved for Jesus and his birthday, and the children get their gifts and their treats and all of that on St. Nicholas Day. So that's where you will see. And in fact, it's interesting in countries like Poland, and I think in a lot of Austria and Germany, that is still the tradition. Gifts on Christmas Day is an American thing. It is not. It is not the origin of Christmas gifts.
Right.
So St. Nicholas was a bishop, and he was known for his generosity to the poor.
Yes.
But the reason where, you know, why we leave out shoes and he fills them with things is that there were three young women from a family who were so desperately poor that they didn't have dowries
to be married, which would have saved their lives.
Right.
But they would continue in this poverty if they did not get married. And the father, obviously, who was caring for them, would have eventually died. He wouldn't be able to care for them working and earning an income.
Right.
And so Bishop Nicholas knew that they were
impoverished.
Poverty.
And women who didn't have enough for a dowry were sometimes, you know, forced into a life of ill repute because they couldn't marry because they had no dowry.
Yes.
So he wanted to spare them from even the potential of that. And so the legend is that he threw money through the family's window for these three girls, and it landed in their shoes, which were drying next to the fireplace.
Yes.
So that's the tradition of keeping your shoes or your stockings near the fireplace. and it being filled with, and that's also why in so many countries you get chocolate gold coins.
Yes.
On the Feast of St. Nicholas. So,
and if you're looking for some of those chocolate gold coins, I saw some at Trader Joe's just this past
weekend.
You
know who else has really good ones?
Who?
Aldi.
Ah!
If you go to Aldi, their candy is all... And Aldi and Trader Joe's are actually owned by the same family.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're two brothers. So one owns the Trader Joe's and the other owns the Aldi. So the chocolate's all from the same area of Germany where they make these German chocolates.
Yeah.
But if you need to get a lot of them, they are inexpensive at Aldi and they are authentic. Like you'll have actual figures of St. Nicholas and chocolate, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd highly recommend that. And they also have marvelous... Stollen, which is sort of the German form of fruitcake. It isn't as dark and doesn't have the alcohol, but it's a marzipan-filled sweet bread with raisins and currants called Stollen. And if you go to Dinkel's Bakery in Lincoln Park, it's like $35 for a Stollen. You can get authentic, imported from Germany Stollen at either Trader Joe's or Aldi for less than $10.
Mary, I used to think the church was your expertise.
Yes.
No. I think it's fruitcake.
Fruitcake and fruitcake. Well, you know, and every
stolen.
Culture has something similar, right?
Yeah.
So in Austria and Germany, it's Stollen. In Great Britain and Ireland, it's fruitcake. In Italy, it's something called panettone, which is a very yeasty bread filled with fruits and nuts. And Trader Joe's used to have the most wonderful gluten-free panettone. All my kids have celiac disease, so we can't have any gluten. But I did finally find an Italian bakery that imports gluten-free panettone from Italy. So, yes, we have found a worthy substitute. It's not as good as Trader Joe's, but it's baking it is, oh, my gosh, so expensive, and it takes hours. And my daughter and I almost killed each other, but she claims she's going to do it again. But, well, listen, it is time for us to go to our next break, friends. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion of the beautiful feasts and other days in Advent here. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Freilich sitting in for Father Anthony on Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststanschurch.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
Winds of Change has an immediate part-time opening for producer board operator. The duties include running the Winds of Change program, assembling the best of programs, working with a host radio station and program hosts, writing the day's program summary for web posting, plus uploading a copy of the day's program to our podcast app. This position would be a worthy opportunity if you're retired and where you can make a difference. The Winds of Change studio is located at 1351 West Evergreen Avenue, Chicago, at the historic St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish. Work hours are middays, Monday through Friday. Email a letter telling us about yourself to adcmedia@hotmail.com. adcmedia@hotmail.com.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Freilich. We're sitting in for Father Anthony today on AM 750 WNDZ, Winds of Change. So we were talking about the Feast of St. Nicholas, which is coming up in just 2 days or tomorrow. I guess in some countries they celebrate it.
Fifth or sixth.
On the fifth, yeah. But, in the United States and most of the English-speaking Western world, we do it on December 6th. So,
well, he's the perfect saint for Christmas, too, because, you mentioned carrying your Magnificat in your purse.
Yes.
And I have mine right here.
You just happen to have it handy. Look at that.
I do.
Okay.
And I opened it up.
Flexing with her Magnificat.
Yes, I opened it to Wednesday the 6th. And as Mary and I were talking, they have commentaries about different saints or about different days, and Pope Benedict is the saint that they Pope Benedict is the person that they chose to run his meditation of the day about St. Nicholas. And here is an interesting point. Nicholas is one of the first people to be venerated as a saint without having been a martyr. His miracle.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. His miracle was not that of great heroism in the face of torture, imprisonment, and death. It was the miracle of constant kindness in everyday life.
Mm.
Another of the legends expresses it very beautifully this way. Whereas all the other miracles could be performed by magicians and demons and thus were ambivalent, one miracle was absolutely transparent and could not involve any deception, namely living out the faith in everyday life for an entire lifetime and maintaining charity.
Wow.
Yeah,
that
is
beautiful.
Like,
yeah.
So beautiful, so cool.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I used to have, when I was working as a prosecutor, I used to have a pencil case. I know it sounds so geeky, but
yeah.
I am and was. But I had my pencil case, and it said, because we used to carry our offices down on those Rubbermaid carts down to our courtrooms.
Right.
But I had a little pencil case that had my pens and all my little geeky things in. But it said, be kind.
Oh, wow.
Because I always wanted to remember to be kind.
Huh.
And there were a lot of defense attorneys that I dealt with, and sometimes it wasn't the defendant that was in trouble. It was the defense attorney, and there was a task or a tax for having a bad attorney that made me mad.
Right,
so
right.
I always used to look at that, and it was something. It was a St. Nicholas little, it had a B on it, so it really didn't have Christmas all year round. But it was reminding me to be kind in the face of adversity and in a system that was adversarial.
Right.
You know, that I didn't have to win every argument, but I did have to be kind.
Right, to everyone, And, that's funny. It's funny you should say that because I sent a message to somebody with whom I have a little bit of conflict yesterday, I had an occasion to be able to say something nice to this person. And I was like, you know, why should, you know, this person would never do this for me and why should I do it? And, you know, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to let my better angels went out. And so I sent it and the person was, messaged me back right away and was so grateful
How
and
wonderful,
thanked me.
Mary.
And then I came across a little reflection later, believe it or not, it was like a meme on Facebook saying, you know, your inner voice will tell you, don't be nice to that person. They'd never be nice to you. Don't go out of your way for that person. They'd never do it for you. Do it anyway.
Yes.
And I thought, well, that was a little affirmation. You know, sometimes God uses even Facebook to to help us to be our best selves. So, anyway, just I've done a tiny little bit of research here while we've been talking on St. Nicholas here. And so I guess in the Netherlands, the primary day that they celebrate is the 5th of December, whereas his feast day is celebrated in the rest of Europe on the 6th of December. So it is called, in Belgium, it is called Sinterklaasfest, which is where we get Santa Claus, or La Saint Nicolas in French. And in the days leading up to the 5th or 6th, depending on where you live, apparently children are told that St. Nicholas has arrived by steamboat in the middle of November. And so they put their shoes in front of their chimneys or in front of their fireplaces. There are special songs for Sinterklaas.
Yes.
And often they put carrots or some hay in their shoes as a gift to St. Nicholas. St. Nicholas comes on a horse.
Yes.
So, again, you can sort of imagine now all of the overlapping with Santa Claus and the reindeer and leaving out, you know, oh, that was my kids. They loved leaving stuff out for the reindeer. It was, you know, then my husband and I would have to pretend to, you know, he'd break the carrots in half and stuff like that. So, and they were, oh my goodness, they just loved that. So, so at any rate, the children and in many countries, parents, they will have little bags filled with presents. Sometimes they're left outside the house, and a neighbor or a parent will go from house to house banging on the doors or the windows, pretending to be the assistant of Sinterklaas. So, so there's some really beautiful, traditions. There is a special that PBS does every year, Channel 11, for those of you who live in the Chicago area. Excuse me. It's that Rick Steves, you know, Europe, where he does Christmas in a whole bunch of different countries in Europe. It is magical. It is so beautiful. And, you know, you see the Catholicity of so many of the traditions. He spends some time with an Austrian family on Christmas Eve. They must have taken years to film this because, you know, he's like Santa. He's in Christmas Eve in eight different countries or something like that. but the father in Austria, the father in the household, takes a pine branch and holy water and goes through each room in the house and blesses each room in the house on Christmas Eve night with holy water. Isn't that beautiful? And here on secular PBS, they're showing that. So I highly, if you've not seen it, it is a beautiful family program. You're like hungry for 2 days after watching when they're in France. I mean, that's just the whole French anticipation and the food and how they, you know, how they prepare for, they save and prepare, you know, the Christmas meal. They really do kind of fast during Advent, but part of that is saving up the money for the really good meal, right? So you're eating very simply so that you can get whatever. They I guess they do like tenderloin wrapped in pate or something that. So,
Well, over Thanksgiving weekend, we kind of huddled around as a family and watched those oldie but goodies.
You guys are big, like, you know,
movies.
Holiday movie people.
Yes.
Do you watch all of those horrible, like, Hallmark movies that all have the same plot?
No. But this year we watched White Christmas.
Okay.
And this is my favorite, Miracle on 34th Street.
Aww.
Don't blow it off because it's in black and white.
Yeah.
The scene.
Yeah, it's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
You know, some of those black and white ones are so much better.
The scene where Natalie Wood watches Santa talk to the children and bring the children on his lap. You reminded me of it when you're talking about Sinterklaas. It's a little Dutch girl that only spoke Dutch, so he speaks Dutch to her. And then they start singing the Sinterklaas song in Dutch. And it's such a lovely scene. I mean, I always get teary when all these kids come. And, I knew you were Santa Claus. Oh, I told you. And so give yourself a little nostalgic thrill and watch Miracle on 34th Street.
Right. And, you know, it is, I think, for a lot of people who, you know, John Cass, who used to write for the Chicago Tribune, and now it is johncassnews.com, K-A-S-S. He's Greek Orthodox. He's not Catholic, but he has... he has a beautiful Christmas Eve column that he reruns every year. He tweaks a couple of the details of it every year so that he will reference a current event or two. But essentially, it's the same column every year. And one of the things, and you and I both, you know, have lost our mothers within recent years, and talks about how, you know, and he's writing it, you know, for the children who, you know, struggling to stay awake so that, you know, and then not off on their dad's shoulder. And for, you know, the uncle who drank too much and then dressed up as Santa and stormed through the house to scare the kids. Like, he has all the, you know, but one of the things he says, for the widow who is lying alone, thinking of all the Christmases, she was so busy wrapping the gifts and filling the stockings and preparing for a house full of guests, and now she's by herself.
Yeah.
It's like a knife to the gut, because you know, my children are getting older now, and boy, I remember on Christmas Eve, I just had a meltdown and started crying. I thought, I'm not going to be able to get this all done before they wake up, you know, and how quickly that time passes.
Yes.
How quickly those days are with you for such a short time. So, you know, young moms, take advantage of that while you have it. And I know everybody tells you that, but, you know, I wish I had paid closer attention. But anyway, we need to go to our final break, listeners. And when we come back, we'll wrap up our discussion on the first week of Advent. This is Mary Fiorito and Loretta Fralick on Winds of Change. Don't go away.
Welcome to a St. Nicholas Minute. Why does St. Nicholas deliver gifts under the cover of night? Well, that tradition began in my hometown of Patara in Asia Minor when I came to the help of a destitute man who had three grown daughters. He was so poor that he could barely feed them. Because he was so desperate, he was tempted to sell them into slavery. Then I remembered the words of Jesus who said, "When you give to the poor, don't let your left hand know what the right hand is doing." And so I put together 3 bags of gold coins and tossed them through the window at night to help them. That was the first of my midnight visits. And that's the reason to this very day, even when I'm dressed as Santa Claus, I still deliver gifts under the cover of night. May the same love, joy, and peace that the angels proclaimed on that first Christmas animate your own heart to give hope to those most in need. For Christ is born. Glorify Him.
You are listening to
Mary Fiorito
and
Loretta Freilich
on Winds of Change.
I'm Lisa Popcheck with More to Life. Advent is the time to reflect on how God took time out of the busiest schedule in the universe to be present to us. This Advent, take some time to make more time to be with the people you love. Make Christ present in your home by being more present. Let God's love be incarnate in the way you attend to the people you care about, and let them know that the most important thing you have to do is spend time with them.
Amen. Well, welcome back, listeners. This is Loretta Freilich and Mary Fiorito, guest hosting for Father Stan, as we do on Mondays. And we started the show talking about Advent, and we kind of moved into our Christmas and Saint preparation. But we want to take a look at what's going on in our church. You know, if you went to Mass on Sunday, you noticed there's a new color scheme. Hmm. We're starting to have that purple or that Advent blue. I always get confused because I think it looks an awful lot like Lent. But, you know, there's not a lot of extra in the church now. And if you look at the Advent wreath, there's 4 candles, 3 purple and 1 pink, that we are lighting for Advent. And so as we are waiting for Jesus, we're paring things away. And you just heard a beautiful meditation about how we want to make time for more people, as Mary
right.
said before
right.
we took that last break. So the other, you know, Jesus came, and this is the beginning of our salvation. And I really want to offer our listeners another, just like you need another Advent preparation. But I would really like to see more of us, you know, Christ came for our salvation. Hmm. And that's the whole point of Christmas. He came for our salvation, and he's going to die on Good Friday and rise again on Easter so we can be with him in heaven. Pick out somebody, a friend, a family member, somebody who's away from the church or away from God, and make them your prayer request this year. Just keep folding it over so that they can come back to Jesus, come back to the church, come back in this Advent season. I know that we have beautiful Advent wreaths, and Advent is also the beginning of the year, the beginning of the liturgical year. And so now we're lighting those Advent wreaths to mark 4 more weeks, 3 more weeks. Oh, we're going to light that pink one and be really excited because it's a joyful color, and we're celebrating that it's Christmas is almost here. The sun's arrival is almost here. But this year, we're not going to have as long. Advent is one day. This year, the fourth Sunday of Advent is one day. So Advent is going to be a little smushed this
mm-hmm.
year.
Mm-hmm.
So I really would recommend, my girlfriend and I, we switch family members.
Yeah.
Because we both have family members that drive us crazy.
Right. Well,
I know
everybody,
none of our listeners have family members that drive us crazy. But we've switched the person we're praying for, because I can pray real easy for her friend or her family member, and she can, because none of the angst is there. So I would recommend either you just find somebody who's away from the Lord and make that person a special prayer request, or you swap out people with somebody that you love, that they'll pray for your person and you'll pray for theirs.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, that's very, and I am a great proponent, actually, my mother was a great proponent of what's called the St. Andrew's Day Christmas Novena.
Yes.
And my mother swore by this novena. She received so many graces from it, was always trying to introduce others to it. And it's not, despite the name, the St. Andrew's Day Christmas Novena, it's neither to St. Andrew nor a novena. So it begins on St. Andrew's feast day, which is November 30th. But if you're just hearing about it now, you are not too late. You just throw a couple extra prayers in every day until you
get, till you get caught up.
Till you get caught up. It's not a big deal. But it is a short prayer. Hail and blessed be the hour and the moment when the Son of Man was born of the most pure Virgin Mary at midnight in Bethlehem in piercing cold. In that hour, vouchsafe, O my God, to hear my prayers and to answer my petitions through the merits of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and through his blessed mother. Amen. And
Amen.
You say that 15 times a day for whatever intention you may have, and it ends on Christmas Eve. And so many graces available just for the asking. So just Google St. Andrew's Day Christmas Novena, and you can even come up with a little beautiful screenshot, and we'll put that in the show notes, that you can save on your phone as your phone wallpaper for the month so that you can remember to say it every time you open up your phone.
And Mary, you were so gracious to put the one I have on my phone out on your Facebook page, so it's really helped me to be able to say that prayer.
Right. So that is that. That's a great novena. Other way, and you know, we were reminded of this at Mass yesterday. If you want to have a good Christmas, a really meaningful, beautiful Christmas, make a good confession before Christmas.
Amen.
Make a good confession in Advent.
Amen.
A lot of parishes will have Advent services, reconciliation services. If you have been, the best thing you can do for yourself, if you want to give a gift to the Lord for Christmas, reconcile yourself with him. Do not be afraid. If you have been away for years, God is ready in mercy to receive you. God would like nothing more. The baby Jesus would like nothing more than for you to reconcile with the church and to reconcile with him. You will have the most profoundly beautiful Christmas day.
Yes.
If you make a good confession before Christmas.
And, you know, Mary, there was a priest at St. Peter's. When I worked in the Loop, I used to go down to St. Peter's, and it was so beautiful. This priest got up and urged everyone to go to confession and ended with, and if the priest starts to admonish you or somehow is not present and publicly loving, you just get up from the kneeler and say, "Excuse me, Father, I thought I'd find Jesus in here and leave."
Wow. Yeah. Oh, boy.
So I'm not recommending misbehaving in the confessional, but know that even priests want you to find Jesus in the confessional. And so I join Mary with that. It seems hard, but believe me, they're making it so easy. Our confessional even has the act of contrition, the adult version. And then you flip it over, and there's the kids' version.
Yeah.
Our churches are doing everything to bring you back to the most beautiful sacrament. This is a season where kids are making their first confession in anticipation of their first Holy Communion in 2024. This is a season of joy.
Yes. Yeah. No, it is. Joy. And again, too, it's not penitential in the sense that Lent is penitential, right, where we have a much stricter fast. But there is a penitential aspect to Lent. And, you know, it's why in so many traditions when, you know, I was growing up, Advent, Christmas Eve was an abstinence day. You couldn't eat, which is why so many Italians and, you know, Poles and a lot of Eastern Europe and even Western Europe now, they still do not eat meat on Christmas Eve.
Right.
It is a meatless meal, you know, and you have the dinner of the seven fishes in Italy and all the other. So just different ways you can make a little sacrifice so that the whole Christmas season can be celebrated, the whole 12 days of Christmas to the full. So, well, listeners, you have a beautiful week. We'll have some things up in the show notes that we talked about today. Count on our prayers, and we will be counting on yours, and we'll see you next week. Have a blessed week.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see?